From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Thursday, June 29th, 2017. And on this day, the potential state government shutdown is taking shape, and it's already spawned a lawsuit. And fantasy sports gambling in Maine looked like it was about to become a reality. Or will it? That's all ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs.
First today, Governor Paul LePage has announced a list of state services and functions that he plans to keep open in the event of a government shutdown. We brought in political reporter Steve Missler to break down the list. How's it going, Steve?
It's going okay. How about you?
All right. Thank you. So what can you tell us about the list that the governor put out today?
Well, I think it's important to first mention that this is a developing list. This is not final. It was a sort of a list that he's already started to compile if there is a shutdown, which would go into effect at midnight on Friday. So his office, there's other requests from various agencies to expand this list. We just don't know what those requests are, and we don't know what services could be affected in the final order that the governor would sign if there is a shutdown.
Okay, noted. So what agencies and services will be open in the government shutdown?
Again, just to remind everybody, this is not final, but the governor put out a partial list that includes all state-run correctional facilities, law enforcement agencies and first responders, such as the Maine State Police, the Drug Enforcement Agency, and the Fire Marshal. The Maine Warden Service and the Marine Patrol will also be working. The governor is also keeping the state parks open, Popham Beach, Baxter State Park. And that would probably save him a lot of blowback, given that we're coming up on the July 4th holiday. Also, the Maine court system also put out a release saying that only half of the state or the state's courthouses will be open during a shutdown. So that's what we know so far. That's the extent of the list that we have.
Is that it then? What about like the Department of Health and Human Services and anti-poverty programs that it administers?
Yeah, at this point, we don't. The only DHHS-run service or agency that we know will stay open, according to the list the governor put out today, is the Riverview Psychiatric Hospital and Dorothea Dix. That's it. And this is going to be, I expect, will be a touchy subject. There's already a lawsuit filed in federal court today on behalf of plaintiffs who receive benefits like food stamps, cash assistance, and MaineCare. That lawsuit basically attempts to ensure that DHHS continues to process applications for benefits and that those benefits are distributed. Right now, they don't appear to be on the governor's list, so that's something of concern for people that receive those benefits, obviously.
So there's already a lawsuit?
There's one, and if there's a shutdown, there'll probably be a lot more, depending on the length of the shutdown, and the list, the final list of essential services that the governor drafts. The other issue to watch for here is that the state employees union is very concerned about pay, and because if they're out of if there's a shutdown, that would essentially mean that what they're concerned about is whether or not they're going to get paychecks, especially for work that they've done in June, which they are supposed to get a check for on July 5th. Today, the state employees send a letter to the governor and legislative leaders, basically saying, you know, just warning them that if they don't pay 3,200 state employees on time on July 5th, the state could suffer $2.3 million in damages. That's just for that deadline. If they continue to miss future deadlines, we're talking about millions of dollars more that the state could face in penalties. And one other final note I should bring up, I was talking to a private contractor who does road work for Maine DOT, and he said he fully expects that his company's projects will be sidelined if there's a shutdown. So if motorists are wondering why the road construction is suddenly stops, the shutdown would be the reason for that.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Steve.
Thanks, Nora.
The legislature has given all but final approval to a measure that would legalize fantasy sports gambling in Maine. But as Mal Leary reports, the measure could be in trouble.
If you listen to professional sports programs, you've likely heard the ads urging fans to play and when.
Sunday morning, I'm like a kid at Christmas.
How is that not a touchdown?
I like the variety of the league.
It's really easy to use.
Choose a one-week league, pick your team, and get your cash winnings after Monday night.
It works like this. Fantasy players put together a fantasy team comprised of athletes from real professional sports teams. They make a payment up front to enter the contest and win money back based on how those players perform in real-life games. Pro football dominates the online leagues run by websites such as FanDuel and DraftKings. Several states have laws regulating the fantasy sports leagues for contests that run from a day to sometimes as long as a week. Representative Kathleen Dillingham, a Republican from Oxford, urged colleagues to add Maine to that list.
I would ask that you support the motion, move forward, and make sure that we're able to have regulations in place for this industry and that we ensure there are consumer protections for the 215,000 participants in the state of Maine.
The bill contains language declaring that the state of Maine views fantasy sports as games of skill, not chance, in order to comply with federal online gambling law. Representative Kent Ackley, an independent from Monmouth, doesn't buy that argument.
I don't believe that the state of Maine ought to be in the business of feeding what could be an addiction.
Ackley also says that the legislation's not a good deal for Maine because the cost of oversight would eat up most of the fees assessed to the companies running the fantasy leagues. The legislation's projected to net just $10,000 in the first year of the law. And Representative Craig Hickman, a Democrat from Winthrop, says the bill is really meant to benefit the fantasy profiteers.
This bill has more holes in it than cheesecloth. This bill is written by an industry to protect an industry, and the state of Maine is being... We're not going to get very much out of this.
Hickman points out the online-based gambling is generating a lot of money nationally. One study estimated $2.6 billion in entry fees nationally were paid in 2015, and that those fees will grow to more than $14 billion in 2020. But Representative William Toole, a Republican from East Machias, says Mainers like their fantasy sports and are already playing it.
Some do it for entertainment. Everybody does it. A lot do it for sport. Our sports fans. And I think this bill is probably the best way forward with daily fantasy.
The legislation would put oversight of fantasy sports gambling under the State Gambling Control Board, which oversees most other gambling in the state. While the bill was passed with wide margins, it still may face difficulties. Governor Paul LePage has not said what he thinks of the proposal, but has opposed gambling expansion through new casinos. If he chooses to veto the bill, supporters will need to pick up more support in the House in order to override it. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
At 8 o'clock tonight, the Trump administration begins enforcement of a travel ban on visa applicants from Syria, Iran, Yemen, Somalia, Sudan, and Libya. Exceptions will be given for applicants with what the order describes as a close relationship with a relative who's already in the U.S. It's not quite clear what that means for students and workers, and in Maine, it is of particular concern to Sudanese and Somali immigrants. Sue Roche is the executive director of the Immigrant Legal Advocacy Project, a not-for-profit organization that provides legal help to immigrant communities in the state. She told me about the new guidelines from the State Department for what qualifies as a bona fide family relationship.
The State Department came out with a cable that gives some guidelines on who is sufficient to have a bona fide relationship with a person. And it needs to be close family members, which does not include grandparents, and it also does not include fiancés. I don't have the list in front of me, but I do know it includes spouses, children, including, you know, married or unmarried children, siblings, and other sort of close relationships, but not, for example, cousins or grandparents, which are often very important in immigrant communities where they're, you know, close with their extended families.
What is your organization doing right now, and what are your plans?
Right. So what we've been doing, and really for all these executive orders that are coming out, is as quickly as we can gaining as much knowledge as we can about what's coming out, what's the impact, how they're being interpreted. And we're trying to provide that information primarily to the immigrant community and certainly also to others who are serving them. There's so much misinformation out there. I think even beyond the individuals who have been impacted, the entire community is very fearful of quickly changing policies that are really focused on people because of their religion or the country of origin. There's a lot of fear. We've even seen people who are permanent residents, who are longtime naturalized U.S. citizens, who are afraid they can't travel out of the country or afraid they might get deported because they get stopped for a speeding ticket because of their Muslim, which obviously that's not the case of the law, but people get confused about the difference between what are statutes that we have that need to be changed through Congress and what are policies and prosecutorial discretion that can be used by the administration.
What are you hearing from these communities?
We're hearing a lot of confusion and a lot of fear. People feel that they're being targeted because of their religion, because they're Muslim. People are just very confused. There's so many really sudden changes that are not being implemented very clearly. There's a lot of confusion. I think even with this new opinion, even though for the most part the Supreme Court has upheld the stay and has, you know, agreed with the lower courts that this is really a discriminatory travel ban, I think there's a lot of confusion about their about how this is applied, how the other ICE enforcement policies are being applied. So I think it's just a lot of confusion in the community.
I think a lot of people associate these Trump travel bans with people being stopped at the airport and that kind of confusion. But with this ban, that's unlikely to happen in a widespread way, although there are concerns about it because the ban will not revoke visas that have already been approved. So what will this look like for people who are in the process of applying for visas?
The cases at the airport are just people at the final stage. But this is really, you know, people who are in the process, people who have been going for years, I mean, refugees who have been going through the vetting process for 2 to 3 years, who may be at the final stage, they're ready to travel. And often the way the refugee process works is if your case gets halted now, you may never get to come. You may just get, you know, put on a lower priority later on. We saw that happening after 9/11. Many people who've been waiting for the process got delayed and then they ended up never getting to get resettled here. People who are, you know, U.S. citizens filing for a fiancé, that unfortunately from a quick read of the State Department cable and from interpretations I've seen, they're not covered. So somebody who is, you know, planning to move here to get married to a U.S. citizen is now going to be banned temporarily at least.
That's Sue Roche, the executive director of the Immigrant Legal Advocacy Project. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Thursday, June 29th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.